Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Great to have back our home improvement expert, John Freiberger. He owns Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg, has more than four decades of experience in home improvements, always a popular guest. And we're going to talk about how to prevent condensation in your home. And, of course, we'll take your questions as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Again, we'd love to hear from you. John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to be back with you, Larry.
Condensation is detrimental to a home in perhaps many ways, John.
That is correct. It can damage anything that is porous or organic. And there's not a lot in our houses, other than the glass on your windows, that it can't damage. And what's funny, of course, this time of year, which is why we're talking about condensation this time of year, is we've had our first cold days, and all kinds of people in Wisconsin are going, oh, those windows are wet again. Well, it's not just windows that get wet from condensation. The condensation can cause some terrible problems.
Well, I'm wondering about leaky old windows. Do they make condensation work worse?
Well, they can if we have air intrusion that is coming around the sashes, creating a cold area. So when we look at houses, I am not an energy analyst, as you know, because you and I are always saying, go hire an energy analyst. But I do have a thermal camera, and I use it on home inspections or at a construction project. If somebody says, God, this feels drafty. And, of course, I'll take a picture, and then there's all this blue and purple where the draft is at the corners of the windows. And, of course, that draft is coming in, and it's lowering the temperature. And we know that what happens with water vapor is it stays in the air unless it's above the dew point. Generally, there's a big exception to that. But if that air is leaking around that old leaky sash and cooling that window, well, then that localized area is going to be at the dew point, even though the rest of the room is way above the dew point. And then we have quality of glass. Our quality of glass, you know, even Energy Star, I'm a little disappointed in what Energy Star thinks is good glass in Wisconsin, because we can do a lot better. And we have U values for glass, and a lot of people don't understand U values because we're looking at transmission. We're used to thinking about R values, because when you talk to your insulation contractor, you know, he'll say, Larry, how much R value do you want in that attic? You want 38, you want 40, you want 45, you want 50. How much do you want in your wall? So we're a little... we know a little bit more about R value. I think we're a little bit more conversant in it. And we have windows out there now that, you know, triple panes with SunStop and with argon coatings and things, where we can get the equivalent of R8 windows, which is 3 to 4 times better than most of the windows that are put in Wisconsin. Now, you pay more money for that. But then we start taking a look, especially our people who live in rural areas and are using LP or using electricity that they have to buy off the grid because they haven't invested in solar panels yet. I think the paybacks are really there. And, of course, in the winter, if our thermal resistance is much better on our glass, we are going to get a lot less condensation on the glass.
Yeah, I was thinking about we spent more money and got better windows and never have water on the condensation on those windows.
That's excellent. But you're also very careful, I'm sure, about keeping your house down to 40% relative humidity in the winter.
Yes.
And some people go, it's winter, it's dry, and yet their house is at 50, 55% relative humidity. And at 55% relative humidity, if the air temperature in your house is 70 degrees and your window glass is at 53 degrees, you're going to get condensation with a standard window.
Yeah, yeah.
So keeping that keeping that down to 40% or 35 if you can manage it. You know, it gets to a certain level in a house, you get shocks. You know, you walk across the carpet and pet the dog, and the poor dog is feels like it's being electrocuted. So we can't get too terribly low. But it seems like between 35 maximum 40% in most of our homes in Wisconsin seems to be the sweet spot.
You know, we're talking windows here, but Mackenzie Crummy, our producer, was telling me she was talking with you about a home inspection you did with, and this was inside the walls. You had mold.
This is the inside surfaces of the house, Larry. This was a nice house. It was built in 1991, and it was a log cabin from a company in Wisconsin that built pretty good log cabins. They did a lot of things right. They got kiln-dried logs so that the logs weren't rotting and things like that. And plus, this house was nicely insulated. Not only did we have the insulation of the 8-inch logs, but then on most of the house, they put up interior stud walls and another layer of insulation there. So I'm thinking these walls are probably about R20 walls. That's a good wall in 1991. So it wasn't a problem with the walls getting all that cold. It was a problem of too much humidity in the house.
Mm.
And this house was nicely finished. They took all this knotty pine and the great room. I think that ceiling is 16 to 20 feet high.
Wow.
So you can imagine how much knotty pine there was, Larry. And then you take your flashlight and shine it along the wall, and you see all these mold blossoms.
Huh.
And you saw the mold growing most thickly where there were knots in the knotty pine or where there was cross-checking because, you know, they saw it through a branch or something like that. And what we learned from that is that porous material will gather moisture and will grow mold above the dew point.
So there is a big issue to get rid of that white mold.
There really is. And what we have to do, of course, before we get rid of the mold is we have to make sure it's not going to regrow. So we have to get the humidity lowered in that house. And that house had one fundamental building error. They didn't know it at the time. In fact, they built the house to the code of the time, the 1991 code. But we have changed our code on wood foundations. And we do have wood foundations in Wisconsin. Wisconsin is the home of wood foundations. And they've been allowed in the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code for a long time. What the code says on right now is that you need to put a layer of plastic on the exterior of the wall. Something like Visqueen will work because that is not vapor permeable. This house was built with just plain treated plywood with dirt against it.
Mm.
So you've got 3/4-inch treated plywood, and it's a damp, sandy area in a woods. So we've had so much moisture coming through the basement walls that this house was at a level where the surface humidity, which is, so there's relative humidity out in the middle of your living room, Larry. But obviously when you get closer to the outside walls or the window, your humidity increases because the temperature is dropping. You know, we got all these little microclimates in our houses. So the surface humidity is what we really look at rather than general relative humidity. There's obviously a relationship between them. But when the surface humidity on all of those really nice walls and drywall hit 85%, water started gathering in the pores of that wood and the pores of the drywall in enough volume to actually grow mold.
Wow.
Joe Stilbrick, one of the foremost building scientists in the U.S., says that we're wrong. There's more than three phases of water. You know, we know water can be ice, water can be liquid, and water can be vapor, right?
Yeah.
He said, well, absorbed surface layers of water are the fourth stage because they become, through atomic attraction, basically micro dots of water in the pores of wood or drywall or other porous materials. And this is what accounts for the ability of mold to grow, is that we have these tiny little micro dots of water in these tiny little pores in our building materials. So if we are not controlling our humidity and we get surface humidity of 85%, mold can grow anywhere in our houses. What was funny about this house, Larry, is when I looked in the attic, which is where we often find mold, although as home inspectors, we don't say it's mold. We say it's something that appears it's probably a fungus and you need to talk to an expert, because home inspectors are generalists. In fact, Larry, home inspectors are not required to look for mold or fungus in the house because it is sort of a specialty, but I do it because I have a little more education at it. But when I looked in the attic was in very nice condition because the attic was vented.
Oh.
It had a good ridge vent, had good soffit vents. The air was moving through the attic, and therefore the attic stayed dry. While the inside of the house was wet, the attic was relatively free of mold. The inside of the house was basically a giant mushroom.
Boy. Boy, oh boy.
Not what you'd expect unless you read the building science.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to ask you later what you're going to have to do to fix that house, but we'll keep that as for a moment because we have so many callers on with condensation questions. Let's go to Linda in Madison, who's been patiently waiting. Linda, hi. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have skylights, and when I pull the blinds at night in the morning, there's condensation on the windows. Sometimes it's just like, you know, a couple inches on the bottom. Sometimes it's the whole window. And after that 7-degree nighttime temperature the other day, it, like the couple inches on the bottom were even frozen. And I guess from what you've just said, it's just because there's just too much humidity in the air.
Yes and no. You've added another factor, though, Linda. When you close those blinds, you don't think of blinds as being an insulator. But the blinds probably change the airflow. Now, these skylights are up high, right? That's the warmest part of the room. But if we close the blinds and we stop the airflow in that area, and that area that is the air trapped between the blinds and the glass gets cold, if you had some really fancy thermal camera and could see through the blinds, you might find that the ceiling up there is 70 degrees, and behind the blinds, it's dropped to 45 degrees. So you're getting condensation, and then where you've got a couple little air leaks, because these are maybe operable skylights, or you often get cold just around the edges of the skylights due to metal transference, you can end up with ice. So if you don't close the blinds, you are less likely to get the amount of condensation that you're getting. You're still going to get it because you've got a colder surface, but closing the blinds lowers the temperature next to the glass, which increases the humidity to the point where it hits the dew point. So leave the blinds open and see if that helps.
Yeah. Good luck, Linda. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Jim in Northeast Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for this very timely show. I definitely have some of my own issues with condensation on our home that was built in the 2000s, but I'm calling on behalf of my daughter. And their home was built in 2015, does not have a humidifier in the basement, but she has to, they struggle with humidity in that house. And she says right now, just about every window has frost around it. And you know, when they wake up in the morning, she's kind of beside herself. It's a new home, but it's just it's just so much moisture. And you know, I remember working on that. I had put in one of those heat recovery ventilators in a home we had many years ago that was fairly tight. That helped us immensely. But you know, and that's, they have a new home, and it really shouldn't do that. Any ideas? Their thermal pane windows. They run the temperature about 65 at night, but she says every window in the house has got moisture on it. So
sure, that doesn't surprise me, Jim. Now, it sounds like her 2015 home was well constructed. So it sounds like what she has there is a house that is relatively airtight and also is relatively vapor tight. So we don't need a humidifier to to increase the moisture in our house. All we need to do is to have the dog breathe, you know, to boil the spaghetti, to take a shower, to not have the top on the fish tank, to have the geraniums in the south window aspirate, and we end up getting moisture into our house. Now, there's a, you can find it online, sources of indoor moisture, and it's really a funny thing. So you've got a, you know, a golden lab, it's X pints of moisture per day versus a little Shih Tzu puppy is like, you know, X pints of moisture a day. But we are continuously creating moisture. Every time you breathe, Jim, in your daughter's house, you're putting moisture in the air. Now, you mentioned an HRV. At this point, if somebody is building a new house and they're building it to code, I would say you have to have an HRV in the house. And in a few years, where we are going to be going for basically no heat loss and no air changes in our houses, every house is going to have an HRV just to be habitable. Not just because of water vapor, but because if we're using a gas range or we burn the toast in the toaster or the off-gassing from the new cushions on the new couch where we're getting formaldehyde in the air, we really need air changes in our houses. Now, my leaky old 1850s farmhouse, I've got good air quality. I also have a high heat bill. Not as bad as most old farmhouses. But if I updated my house to the sort of air changes, limited air changes, and limited vapor permeance that we expect in a 2015 or 2022 house, I would absolutely put an HRV in. So I think you want to have her talk to the local heating guy, put in an HRV, put in a humidistat. I think you can get HRVs now that will turn on automatically when it hits whatever you have set as the maximum humidity in the house. Now, she's probably still going to get some condensation on windows at some places when it's really cold out, but it's probably really going to decrease it. Plus, it's going to improve the indoor air quality in general. It's going to lower the CO. It's going to lower the volatile organic compounds in the air, and your daughter's just going to be healthier and happier because she's got an HRV. Jim, they're great Christmas presents. I should get one of the Red Bull.
What are those run, by the way, John?
A few thousand dollars. It really depends upon the quality and the volume of air that you need to handle because, you know, our houses go everywhere from 900 feet to 9,000, Larry.
Yeah.
But I think you're anywhere from 2,000 to 6,000, and it depends upon how complicated it is. You know, I was putting HRVs in houses 30 years ago. Now, what we started doing is we linked them with the bathroom and the kitchen exhaust fans. So if you turned on your bathroom exhaust fan when you're taking a shower, that air wasn't blown outside. It went out through an HRV. And in case the listeners don't know what an HRV is, Larry, let me just explain real briefly. So it's a heat recovery ventilator. So what it does is it has a core like a sort of like a car radiator. So the warm air blowing out of the bathroom at 20 degrees, that core, and then the incoming air goes through that same core and is warmed up. So it's 10 below outside, but the air you're bringing into the house is 50 degrees. So in northern Wisconsin, where so many of our listeners live, and it really gets cold for a long time, you know, obviously you can turn on the bathroom exhaust fans and things like that, and it'll induce some air changes in the house because you're depressurizing it, but you're bringing in cold air. The idea of the HRV is let's scavenge that heat you've already paid for and reuse it.
Our guest today, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg, consults in restoring, adapting, and reusing older homes and other buildings. Mackenzie Crummy is our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your home today, we've zeroed in on condensation in the home, and certainly we can talk more about that and will, but we can take other questions too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Jared in Holman, it's your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I have a house that was built in 1999, and it has LP smart board lap siding. And we recently had a curtain rod on one of the south-facing walls. The window curtain rod was pulled down by accident, and one of the screws that came out of the wall was rust coated. And it was an encoded screw, but it had rust on it. And I didn't know if you could speak to that. We do have a humidifier in the home, and we have an air-air exchanger as well.
So you're wondering if there's condensation in the wall perhaps then, Jared?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think there is condensation in the wall, Jared, but it may be very, very localized. If your house is built in 1999, it is almost certain that a layer of plastic sheeting, often called visqueen, was applied on the interior over the studs. And the idea of that visqueen, especially in Holman, where it gets fairly cold, is to keep water vapor from wandering into that wall and then condensing out in your insulation, reducing the insulation value. But when the screw was put in through the drywall, and it probably went right through the vapor barrier. So we may have a little tiny spot there where water vapor is getting into the wall around that screw. So it could be that it's not a problem. And maybe what we need to do the next time we put the screw back in is we need to put a little silicone caulk in there and put the screw back in, and maybe that'll seal the hole in the vapor barrier. And that's about all I can come up with, Jared. But it could be that you really don't have a problem. Now, certainly, Larry and I, every program, talk about the usefulness of having a real energy audit done on your house, where somebody comes in with thermal imaging, and they take a look at the walls. And if we find areas where we have got a lot of humidity inside the walls, it is going to have different characteristics as far as heat transfer through the insulation. And a good thermal imager can look at those things and tell you. So your house is only 22 years old, but even on a 22-year-old house, building science has changed so much in the last 10 years that you might find it worth your while to hire an energy analyst just by going online and Google and go energy analyst in my area. Spend the money on it, and they will tell you what kind of payback you're going to get to air seal or re-insulate the sill boxes or add insulation to the attic or whatever. Since it sounds like if you've got an HRV, you're keeping the humidity around 40%, you really should not have a lot of problems, assuming that the visqueen vapor barrier was put. And you can usually just unscrew a faceplate from a light switch or an outlet, and you will probably see the plastic there. Now, nowadays, we foam all of those openings. They have to be sealed. I think in 99, they probably just put the visqueen on the wall and then they cut holes in it. So sometimes we'll find that we've got so these cold spots or condensation spots wherever we've got a penetration in the visqueen. But those are the sorts of things you're going to find out if you have an energy analyst come in your house and walk around with that person, he or she, and watch over their shoulders. They use their thermal imager. December, January, February, when it's nice and cold, is a great time to use the thermal imager.
Yeah, I had that done in a previous house in a January time frame, and man, that was money well spent. I got some great advice on, saw where the leaks were. We were able to close them up, and it made a big difference. So it's worth a few $100 to have that done.
Indeed. It's really the application of science instead of guesswork.
Yep. Yeah. There you go, Jared. Thank you so much. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Dawn in La Crosse next. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, good morning. My house is about 80 years old, and my basement is a stone basement with a cement block above that. And in the cement block, I have glass block windows, real thick and nice. The frame around those is old bricks, and then there was like cement over that to smooth it out. And over the years, that's kind of worn away. And last summer, I had some water getting in there. And I'm wondering if I can get some premixed mortar and put it in between the bricks to seal that up again, and if that would work where the cement block meets the stone wall.
Well, it's a complicated question. I think it'd probably be a good thing to talk to a restoration mason in La Crosse. And I know that, you know, you've got a lot of old buildings there that people are maintaining. So there's some masons in La Crosse that actually know what they're doing. when we mix brick and stone, or not brick and stone, cement block and stone, do act differently. The type of mortar that you're using on stone is different than the type of mortar that you're using on concrete block. So taking a look at the details, I mean, right now the masons aren't terribly busy because we're not heating jobs and they've got time to come and look at it. So I would call a couple of masons in your area and say, are you good with old stuff? Can you come over and take a look at this? And talk to two or three of them and get a couple of prices, because you're not going to do anything till next spring anyway. There's a lot of things that we try to take a look at, and that is, we know there's moisture in the ground, and how is that breathing out? For example, we find a lot of people with old stone foundations above ground, and then they porridge or plaster over it with hard Portland cement, and it traps the moisture in the wall. And actually, you can start rotting floor joists because you've trapped the moisture. So it gets to be really complicated, and without actually doing a site visit, it is difficult to prescribe over the phone. So I would talk to some masons there that worked in some of the old downtown buildings and have them come out and take a look at it. And like I said, right now they've probably got some free time. They won't mind coming out looking at a little job for you. I hope that helps.
Yeah, Don, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join in. Open lines get you on pretty quickly now. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can shoot us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. A lot of people use humidifiers in their homes during the winter. Other suggestions that you might have, John, for people who want to eliminate dry air but don't want the condensation?
Well, there's nothing wrong with a humidifier in an old house that's very leaky, but the first thing I always think of, Larry, let's just repeat ourselves again. Talk to an energy analyst. Why do you want to pay to heat all this outside air that's coming into your house, and why do you want to allow all this air you've already paid to heat to run outside? Because if we have decent control so we don't have a lot of air changes in the house, the natural humidity that we talked about before, just from breathing, pets, plants, cooking, etc., is going to humidify your house. So before I spent the money on a humidifier, I would think about having an energy analysis done. If you do put a humidifier on your furnace, and I see them in brand new homes, and why they're there, I have no idea, because I think they're somewhere between useless and dangerous in a new house. You know, we've had Jim talk about his daughter's wet house. Make sure that you have a humidistat that you pick up at a hardware store that tells you what the humidity is in your house. Do not rely upon the humidifier control. I found them to be highly inaccurate. I found them to be off by 40 and 50 points. You set it at 40 and your humidity is actually at 60. So double check. You'll probably get a humidistat at the hardware store for $20 and know what your humidity is in your house. But if your house needs to be humidified because it's too dry, the way old drafty farmhouses and 1910 bungalows are, it's because we have too many air leaks. So why not cure the real problem? Because that also is going to have a positive effect on your heating bill.
Let's go to Carl in La Crosse next. Carl, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I was wondering about any suggestions for, like, a new construction house, and ideas for insulation to kind of fix the problem before it ever is a problem, if that could be done, you know, other than, like, what type of insulation is recommended, or should it do that infrared test after the fact, that kind of stuff, while we're building.
Yeah, really well-educated question there, Carl. There's a couple places that we can look. One of them would be going all the way to Alaska. It's actually colder up there than Wisconsin, believe it or not. In fact, right now, it's been horrible up there. It's been 20 degrees below normal where I've got family living in Anchorage. But the Cold Climate Housing and Research Center is located in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I believe that their website, this may be, you may have to Google it, but Carl, I believe the website is info@cchrc.org. So CCHRC for Cold Climate Housing Research Center.org. you can look at some of their systems. Now, they are designing for rural Alaska where it's frightfully cold and you are paying an awful lot of money for LP. So they have systems. One of them is called the remote, the residential exterior membrane outside insulation technique. And then they have a bunch of others as well. And they have been out there for at least the last 20 years. And they will simply build houses. And then they test them and test them. And everything you get from them, they are a nonprofit. So I would start taking a look there. And then your second question is testing a good idea. Yes, it certainly is. And you want to let the builder know you're planning to test. You want the builder to say, here's what you're going to have for air changes. It's not going to be 7 per hour at 50 pascals. It's going to be whatever you want. You know, it could be 2 at 50 pascals, hard to reach, but good detailing. And then do a little bit of reading on that. There are places online where you can take a look at how to seal your house well. When you look at insulation types, I really like spray foam insulation because it's giving you a vapor barrier, thermal barrier, and air barrier. It tends to stop leaks, tends to stop thermal transference, and it tends to stop air loss. It is more expensive, but on the long term, La Crosse isn't the coldest part of Wisconsin, to be sure, but still, I think there's going to be a good payback over the long term. My guess is you probably can find a building scientist at the University of La Crosse that might be interested in talking to you. Talk to some local contractors that seem to be a little bit better educated and lay out a program and do a little bit of research at CCHRC and other places that you can download and get a real good design and then make sure it's done right.
Yeah, there you go, Carl. When we did the complete remodel, and you know my home, John, when we did the complete remodel, we went with dense pack insulation in the walls, but then where we went from one floor to the next, we went with the foam insulation. So we mm-hmm. attacked it that way.
Right.
Probably not as
where
good.
Where we have the changes in the exterior sheathing, we've always know about our basement sill boxes. We forget about that we got sill boxes between the first floor and the second floor. And when you take your thermal imager and take a look at it, you can tell where there isn't insulation, where the air leaks are. And those boxes are really worth paying special attention to, as you did, by using this. If you can't afford the spray foam everywhere, at least do those high-impact areas.
Yeah. Carl, thank you again. Kathleen in Lancaster, it's your turn. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello. The older part of my house is an 1862 log cabin, and over the years, somebody has put plasterboard over the logs on the inside, and in the winter, I get quite thick frost on the walls, especially where there's furniture in front of the walls, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering what I can do about that.
Well, you need at least 8-inch logs to have any decent thermal resistance. And I don't know how thick the logs are on your house, and I don't know what condition the chinking is in. Because obviously, if you've got loose chinking, and we've got a lot of air moving in and out of those walls, we're going to get that area behind that plasterboard pretty cold. So, again, for the third time, we're going to suggest maybe some thermal imaging and a local energy inspector, maybe somebody out of Dodgeville or Prairie du Chien or something, can come to Lancaster and do a little bit of testing. Now, we talk about the thermal imaging a lot, and I've invested in a camera because it educates me a lot. I have not invested in all of the equipment you need to depressurize the house. But basically what they do, Kathleen, is they'll open your front door and put this giant fan in there, and they'll mask it all off. And it's a calibrated fan. They'll depressurize your house to 50 pascals. And then they will be able to tell by the fan operation and the gauges how leaky your house is. And we've had old houses where they couldn't get it down to 50 pascals. The houses were filling up with air as fast as the fan moved it out. Could be your case. So I think I would start with that. There obviously would be ways of retrofitting that. If this drywall may just be on studs with no insulation, we don't know. So you can have somebody come in with a borescope and look inside those walls as well. But I think if this is really an issue for you, I would start with an energy analyst. And as they're doing this, everybody, look over their shoulder. You'll be amazed at how quickly you can figure out almost instantaneously what the colors in that camera mean. And, of course, it's got a printout on the screen as well telling you exactly what temperature everything is. But you'll really find out a lot about your house. Get some science before you start spending money. Yeah, the problem, especially log cabins, I love to preserve log cabins, and we've got to be careful because logs have to be able to breathe. We've got to protect them from moisture from the outside and the inside, and we do have good statistics and studies on log houses as how to do that, which you can get online. Even the International Code Council has adopted the International Log Home Builder Standards, which used to be the Canadian Log Home Standards Builders. Log Home Builder Standards, there we go. And all of those things are available online. Some of them, unfortunately, you have to pay for to get the downloads. But a log house is certainly something is worth preserving as part of Wisconsin history. And you can make them more efficient. You just need to have some science so you know which direction to go.
Thank you very much for calling, Kathleen. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today, we've been talking a lot about condensation, but taking other questions as well with our guest, John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures. His firm is Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. Always great to have John stop by, and great to have you listening in and calling. You can call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Jay in Two Rivers, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Morning. In my neck of the woods, there is quite a few homes like mine that are about 100 years old or so, balloon construction. But we've got good quality interior double hung windows, and they're not drafty, they don't leak, but we don't have insulation in the walls. We did have an energy audit done. However, apparently in order to blow in insulation, the knob and tube wiring would have to be replaced. And the cost really for us, we wouldn't live long enough to make up the difference in less energy per month. What do you have to suggest for those of us that have empty walls and still have the old wiring?
Buy a lottery ticket every day. I think that's probably the best. No, it really is a problem. Now, knob and tube wiring, there's nothing that says we have to remove knob and tube wiring, but your insulator is correct. We are not allowed to put insulation around knob and tube wiring because it is heat dissipating. You know, it's not the greatest copper in the world. And so it gives off heat. If we insulate around it, it basically melts the jacket, and then we get arcing and the house blows up, burns down. So the insulator is correct. What's the exterior of your house look like right now, Jay?
Well, it has the original wood siding, but
what kind of condition is that in?
It's got a secondary siding that was put over it, and that's an old Johns Manville asbestos.
Oh, sure. Wonderful stuff.
I think so. We've got another problem there.
Yeah. Well, what you may want to think about is there's a second reason not to insulate your house, even though there was no knob and tube. And that is, once we insulate those walls, unless we can put a complete interior vapor and air barrier on, we are going to have humidity moving through that insulation. And the first condensing solid surface is the inside of your exterior wall sheathing, which is then going to get wet. And you're balloon framed. So the nails in your house are really, really important. because you basically got a stress skin construction. And if we get water in that wall on the outside sheathing and rust away those nails, your whole house could get real interesting. In fact, if your house was on the National Historic Register, you would not be allowed to insulate those walls unless you were able to provide the vapor and the air barrier based upon Department of Interior studies. So outsolation, which is different than insulation, is maybe the thing to think about. So you've got this old asbestos stuff, which fortunately is non-friable and isn't all that difficult to deal with. And under that, you've probably got bad wood. And then you have really no exterior air barrier. And so maybe think about long term. And, you know, I tell people, you don't have to do a whole house at once. It's too expensive. But do what my daughter's doing. Do one side at a time. Take off the old insulation, wrap it in Tyvek, add a couple layers of foam, put new siding on it, even if it's vinyl siding. You are still going to have a tremendous change in the amount of heat loss that you have due both to radiant loss and due to air changes. And especially, you know, if you're in Two Rivers where you're getting winds off the lake and things like that, I would expect that you would get a pretty good payback. When they did your energy analysis, Jay, did they talk to you about what outsolation, you know, basically putting a couple inches of foam on the exterior would do for you?
No, they talked about blowing the insulation from the interior. Putting
You're the person who did your house. They'll look at their records and say, look, what do you think about putting foam? We can use two layers of really good quality, like a urethane or something, with a foil face, and we can get like our 14.4 on the outside. And you add in the wood sheathing and things, we can probably get those walls up to R19 or R20 or so. So I bet that the person who did your energy analysis would be willing to take the question and answer it for free.
Yeah, I'd check on that, Jay. Good luck. Appreciate your call very much. And as you say, you don't have to do the whole house. You can do a piece at a time.
That's right. There's not, you know, do a good job, and you just tell your neighbors I'm being super careful.
Okay. Yeah.
Because this work, I mean, we got to realize all this work really is expensive. It's tough, and people have limited incomes. But if we talk to when Jay talks to his energy person, they should be able to say, okay, you are going to save X dollars per year. And you can at least take a look at that and say what kind of percentage. If you're saving 5-7% a year, that's like buying a really grade A bond or something like that, isn't it? I mean, it's a lot better than you get on your savings account.
Yep, absolutely. Good luck, Jay. Thank you so much for calling. Frank in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call.
I had two questions. One similar to the previous caller, but my house is a stucco. It's parts of it are, you know, might be 100 years old. It's hard to tell.
Uh-huh.
But it's stucco exterior and plaster interior. It needs new. It's got old leaky windows and doors that were badly installed, you know, because of the construction. And just kind of want, and there's no insulation in the walls for
right.
sure.
Right.
So just wondering, you know, like, should I just tear it down? Or can you take
it
off and do the insulation, or, you know, do the plaster on the inside? You know, what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Well, the question is, what kind of shape is the stucco in? Is it still inside? Is it, if it's old lime stucco, it's amazing how long it can last. It can literally last 200 years. If the stucco is in bad shape, well, yes, then we can certainly work from the exterior. But if the stucco's in good shape, the reason they did the house in stucco is that limited air intrusion. And you may have a little insulation in the wall. It may not be what you think of as insulation, but it might be balsam fir or linen waffle board, which is like a flexible material. It looks very fibrous. And often on stucco houses, they put this
in the middle of the wall, nailed between the studs, because what it is gave you two dead air spaces. So what I would focus on that house is those windows, because if those windows are leaking and the water is getting in behind that stucco, which is on with either wood lath with metal nails or metal lath, it's going to damage the stucco. So let us reduce our air filtration and loss through those windows. And then once we have reduced our energy costs and air changes to that extent, is it worth doing anything next? Because what we're going to do is we're going to pick the low-hanging fruit first, and we're going to get the best return on our investment. So I would start with that. Again, you may want to talk to an energy person in your area, but be very, very careful. The stucco, just like as we talked to Jay with the balloon framing in Two Rivers, is we can really damage stucco if we get the insides of the walls wet. And these are great old systems. And if you've got high-efficiency appliances, the windows don't leak, we've got the sill boxes well-insulated, the attic well-insulated, we may be able to just leave those walls alone for another 50 years.
Hmm.
So get some building science applied by somebody who actually knows these old systems.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Frank, good luck. Appreciate it. Don in Fenimore, we'll go to you now. Hi, Don.
Hey, good morning. My question was, you were talking about the thermal imaging cameras, and I just popped up online and looked at a few.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to go anywhere from $75 to $4,000 or $5,000. How much do you need to spend on one of these to actually do it yourself?
Well, I know there's one you can put on your iPhone. I think it's easier to hire somebody than to buy the camera. Cheaper. I would go that way. I would get the guy with the $12,000 camera to come over to my house for a couple hours and watch over his shoulder rather than buying the camera. I think that's the best way to go. And, you know, the other thing is we always talk about these energy inspections. I mentioned the blower door test. Air infiltration is a big thing. So we really want to find out what our air infiltration rates are, as well as what we've got for insulation in the wall. So, yeah, you can, I think for $75, you can buy an iPhone app or something or other. And I know one of the brokers I work with, he loves following me around with my expensive camera and showing me that. He said, well, it's pretty close to yours. I go, no, it's really not. But yeah, maybe buy one of the really cheap ones, you know, just a Christmas present, right? Drop the hint and give you a little bit of a walk around. But to really know much, I think you've got to buy a pretty good professional grade camera. And you've got to be able to read temperatures in the tenths of degrees. And that's pretty low. And you're going to have to get a decent camera to do that.
Oh, there you go, Don. Thank you. Bob in Green Bay. Hello.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening and earlier. There was talk about humidity, and one of the things that was said was that why exchange outside air that you'd have to reheat rather than just, you know, using the air that you've already heated. And I guess that brings up a concern that, you know, why exchange air? But why wouldn't you want to exchange air? I mean, if you don't, you're going to eventually get to the point where your house is too tight. You're going to have, you know, unbreathable air.
Right, exactly. No, I think I tried to cover that when we talked to Jim up in northeastern Wisconsin, is the HRV is not only get humidity out of the house, but CO, I mean, all of the stuff we buy at the big box store and put in our house is outgassing, you know, interesting compounds. So you are completely right, Bob. We really need to have air changes in our house, but we need to control them and scavenge that heat, because we do not want to pay for that heat 3, 4, or 5 times over during the course of the day. Now, I really like heat recovery vent systems. I really think that anyone with a newer house or an older house that they're planning to tighten up, when they buy a new furnace, because that's time to do it, talk to your HVAC contractor and say, what's it going to cost to add an HRV? Also, you know, in the old days, we called them, what do we call them? Air-to-air heat exchangers.
Yep.
What is it going to cost to add that while I'm putting in my new 96% efficient furnace or 98%. Well, it doesn't work well with the boiler, but you can put in HRVs even with houses with boilers.
Makes good sense to me. And Bob, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. John Freiberger, our guest today, he's going to be with us right up till 12:30. John, Wisconsin registered home inspector. His firm is Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. You can join in right now. Get in line. We've got open lines for you at 800-642-1234. A couple of places for emails as well. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and with me, John Freiberger. John owns Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg, is with us every couple of months to address your home improvement questions. So looking for ways to save energy this winter, questions about your chimney or your heating system, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And John, Chris emailed and has a country home built in 2013. He has wood floors, HRV, and a humidifier system with geothermal heating cooling and Pella casement windows. The house is kept at 35% humidity, but still has condensation on the windows. Is there a better humidity level to avoid moisture?
Probably not, Larry. It sounds like they've done everything right. Except, excuse me, they didn't buy as good a window as is available on the market. And this is, I remember you and I did a program on windows, and I think every single caller called in with a window question.
Yeah.
And we should almost do that again sometime. Because the differences in windows and what the difference between what is commonly sold and what you can ask for, yes, for more money. But not a lot more money, makes a gigantic difference because there is a 400% difference in heat loss between a typical window and the better windows that we can order, and that's a lot. So what she simply has is, as I said earlier, if her house is 70 degrees and she's at 35% humidity, then she is with, if her windows get down to 40 degrees, she's going to start getting condensation. If they get down to 36 degrees, they're going to get a lot of condensation. So the inside of the house is nice and warm. They have low utility bills. But the problem is that the air near the windows and on the surface of the windows gets cold due to thermal transference. So we end up with what we call a first condensing surface, which is basically something that's hit the dew point. So even at 35%, when it gets cold outside, with the windows that they have, which are, you know, probably, you know, the fairly typical, you know, U26, U23 windows, they are going to start to get condensation. So when we put all of this money in making houses really efficient, we need to sometimes spend a little bit more on the glass. And it's just the glass. It's not just, well, there is a difference in the frames. We know that too. But the glass is really makes a big difference in our windows.
Another one of those things where you might, rather than replace all the windows at one time, you might start in the area where the problem was worse and go from there.
Yeah, certainly in old houses, you're exactly right, Larry, because every place in Wisconsin, we know where the prevailing winds come from. I mean, my house, it's the south and the west, and I'm rebuilding some of my 1850 windows, and I'm replacing the ones that they stuck in 1929, and I'm starting on the west side because that's where the wind is, but you are completely right. It's better to do it right than to do it all at once. It's better to do it right than to do cheap, because sometimes nothing is more expensive than cheap.
Yeah. Let's go to Craig in Plover. Craig, thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry and John. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 1960s ranch home. I had a leak in the roof over one of the bedrooms that caused the ceiling drywall and corresponding cellulose insulation to cave in. So I'm doing a repair and re-insulating, and it seems as though there was a vapor barrier on the drywall ceiling itself, and then cellulose insulation added over it. I am going to install shake and rake insulation, and I want to know if I need a vapor barrier in this 10 by 10 area that's going to be the patch, if you will.
Yeah, easy question, yes. It's required by building science. It's also required by Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code, because otherwise what's going to happen is we're going to have vapor barrier moving up through your insulation. If it condenses in the insulation, it is going to cause issues. If it condenses on the underside of your roof and damages your sheathing, you're going to have another problem. If it is really difficult to get a vapor barrier in there for some reason or other, the other thing that one can do is go ahead and put up the drywall and then spray at least 1 inch or preferably 2 inches of closed cell spray in the attic, and then put your insulation right over the top of that, because what that 2 inches or inch even of spray foam in the attic is going to do is it's going to give you the vapor barrier required by code. It's also going to give you an air barrier, so it's going to seal around the ceiling lights, and it's going to seal around a bunch of joints as well. It is going to cost you a little bit more money, but a lot of insulation contractors now are doing the two-part spray foam. So that's a possibility. The other thing is to go ahead and put the Visqueen on the ceiling from below, seal very carefully where you've got penetration for the lights. Try to get it as sealed as best you can where we have the exterior walls. Caulk it, overlap it as much as you can, but reduce the amount of vapor and air that is getting into your attic, where it will simply do more damage if it gets up there.
Yep. There you go, Craig. Thank you. Jim in Waukesha, your turn now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry and John. Thanks for taking my call. The question I have has to do with my house cottage up near Minocqua, and I'd like to do something to increase the level of comfort in the basement in the wintertime. And I've been doing some research and trying to figure out how to insulate the block concrete walls that I have down there. They seem to be really cold in the wintertime. I do have a forced air heating system and do have ductwork down in the basement that blows warm air in there. But it's relatively cold. So, like, I'm really wondering what's the best way to provide some level of comfort by insulating the block walls and doing the job right as opposed to doing the job cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've got some concerns because some of the most efficient insulation, we have right now is foam. People do spray foam walls, but it's a big problem because any foam that we use in the state of Wisconsin, other than in sill boxes, has to be covered by a 15-minute thermal barrier, because when you burn foam, it's nasty. It'll kill you. So that means we don't want to spray the walls. There are foams available that have built into their surface what they call an intumescent barrier, a 15-minute thermal barrier, and those are approved by the state of Wisconsin. They used to be, I think you used to be able to get them online really easily, but you may have to call your local building inspector and say, what would you approve? I believe that Thermax is one of the companies that makes a foam that has the certified 15-minute thermal barrier. And that insulation can simply be applied against the wall. Now, do you have any water leak problems up there?
No, not at all. I've got 100 feet of sand, and the water just goes right through the sand very quickly. So, no, there's no water at all.
So I think then that mechanically fastening foam, and you can figure out how many layers you want to put on. I mean, two layers two layers is going to give you about R14, R15. You figure in things like the dead air layer, it might even be R16. The other thing to check out there, Jim, is if you're getting a lot of air intrusion above the wall and where the framing is sitting on top of the wall, because concrete block walls are never perfectly level. And if there wasn't sill seal or something else up there, you may be getting a tremendous amount of air in through the sill boxes at the top of the wall. So now that area, you could use the two-part spray foam in and then use the 15-minute thermal barrier foam below that, which a local contractor should be able to put on for you, probably mechanically fastened. And there are a few of them out there that have a thermal finish that almost looks like glass board or plastic or something. You may have to talk to the local lumber yards in that area. And in fact, that'd probably be a good place to start. You just say, look, I got to have something with a 15-minute thermal barrier on it. What do you have? Give me the options and find out what's there and what you can then easily install.
Good luck, Jim.
The thing is, you get into the soil, we don't have a lot of heat loss once we get 3-4 feet down.
Yeah.
So you see the upper portion of the wall. And very often people are talking about, well, we're going to insulate the block wall, but then we find there's so much air intrusion, so much cold at the sill box, that once we fix that, we end up never doing the wall.
Yeah. Something to think about, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Pete in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Larry. Hi, John. Hey, I'm calling to, people do know about getting thermal imagers pretty cheaply. But what they need to realize is the combination of thermal image and blower door testing is far more diagnostic than just thermal imaging by itself. I have thermal image homes here in the La Crosse area, and I can tell you most of the homes that I have imaged lose more heat by air leaks than they do by insulation deficiencies. But to really know what you have, you need to do both. You need to image with the blower on and then with the blower off, and seeing what the house looks like with the blower door on is really the most helpful part of thermal imaging. And, if I can plug my services, having someone who knows what they're doing doesn't hurt either. Just because you don't know where to look. Or most people don't know where to look for these leaks. So that's all I want to say.
I believe the general statistics for Wisconsin and for most cold climate housing is that 40% of our heat loss is air movement. And you can have R50 insulation in your attic and still not be thermally efficient because of the heat loss that you've got around the recessed cans and up through the light switches. So this depressurization to 50 pascals, thermal imaging during that, some people even use the smoke candles to just demonstrate, when the smoke is blowing absolutely straight sideways next to the window, it's pretty easy to convince the homeowner that no one ever bothered to seal around their brand new expensive windows, and all the leaks are coming around the edges. With the thermal image, I can look at the edge of the windows and I go, that's cold. But unless the house is depressurized, I don't know if it's cold just from thermal transfer or if because the guy who did the work on the exterior never sealed those new windows to the wind and water barrier. So I completely endorse what Pete's saying.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it very much. Tom and Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hello. So, question about the heat exchange system. There are two of them, I believe. One, the heat exchange. The other one, energy exchange. I may have the names wrong. Which one of the two is more appropriate for our climate? And can I wait, or should I wait until I get the new furnace, or can I install it now? It's 15 years old and just change the furnace when I need to.
Yeah. I think the HRV is perfectly fine for Wisconsin. The ERVs are a bit more complicated, and they will maybe help. I think that the mixed climate and the warmer climates have more of a tendency to use the ERVs, and we use the HRVs. I would talk to a couple of your local heating guys and say, what are you charging? What products are you selling? Research the products. Make sure they're good. There are products out there that have trouble with the cores. The cores only last a few years. And if you have an HRV, remember it needs to be maintained. It needs to be inspected annually. Filters need to be changed. You need to check the core. So just because you put in an HRV 10 years ago doesn't mean it's working right now. So do a little bit of research. And I think, Tom, most HVAC contractors are pretty good. Most of them are... It's one of those jobs. It's sort of like it's sort of like being an electrician or a plumber, is you really have to know a lot to do it. I mean, it really is a skilled trade, and a lot of these people really care, and they're really learning building science. So I would talk to a couple of local people. If you're having problems with your house, maybe you want it sooner rather than later. I mean, if you're getting mold in your house and you end up with a $2,000 mold remediation bill, well, let's put an HRV in now. But if it isn't so bad and you're planning on tightening up the house later, which might cause humidity to come up, well, then you can maybe wait and do it with the furnace as long as you don't change the other characteristics of the house before the HRV goes in.
Good luck, Tom. Thank you. Carl in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Carl.
Hello. I just got another question real quick about that spray foam insulation. Have you heard of any issues with the outgassing from that? Because I've heard some horror stories. I don't know if they're rumors or what, but I saw a video and they had to remove the whole roof of the house because once the spray foam's in, you can't get it out. And it was outgassing so much that they couldn't live there. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we had spray foams that were really a problem in the old days. In the 70s, we had urea formaldehyde foam. You can imagine how wonderful that stuff was. It took 11 years to outgas, according to the researchers in Canada. So, yeah, it was terrible. The modern closed cell foam, and there's a lot of foams out there. If you're all organic, you can get foam made out of soybeans if you don't want to use petrochemicals. So the thing is to do some research. But generally, as far as recent problems with foam, the problems we've been seeing is with if it's mismixed. So they're getting the wrong proportions at the wrong temperatures and spraying it wrong. It's like anything. If you're changing the oil in the car and they put antifreeze in instead of oil, you got a big problem. It's not because oil's bad or antifreeze is bad. It's just in the wrong place and done wrong. So I think that spray foam is a great product. You've got to make sure that whoever is doing it, that this isn't their first job. And there's a lot of different varieties out there. So do a little bit of checking. Check on warranties. Almost every manufacturer is going to have a warranty available online so that if there would be a problem with it, you know what kind of recourse you have. So a little research goes a long way, but I have been involved with spray foams since the 1980s, I would say. And open cell, the old isonine and some that were water-based sprays. So there's so many different things out there, Carl. So do some research. Most places have corporate websites, and unlike the rest of the internet, corporate websites seem to have actual real information on them. Check consumer reports. When you have an installer, see what their rating is on Angie's or the other places. Do they do a great job? So, we spend a lot of money on our houses, so we always want to proceed carefully, the way Carl is doing, and do our research.
Thanks, Carl. Appreciate it. Jessica from Madison emailed, has a 100-year-old home with a central brick chimney. The outer layer of the chimney in the basement was painted, and now it's flaking off. Should Jessica be concerned, and how do they stop the flaking?
Well, unfortunately, we don't know too much about Jessica's chimney. First, is it still being used? If it is, let's stop using it. Yeah. Because if we have what are called atmospherically coupled appliances, like the old-fashioned water heaters with the vents with the metal pipes or the old-fashioned furnaces or the old-fashioned boilers, we really want to eventually get rid of those. We want to replace them with high-efficiency side-vented boilers, side-vented furnaces, and side-vented water heaters. Chimneys are an absolute terrible heat loser. I think as as Pete in La Crosse would testify, when you start looking at the air gap around a chimney, which often is as large as 2 inches because they wanted space between a hot chimney and the house, you have a hole that goes from your basement right up into your attic. So a lot of humidity, water vapor as well as heat are going into the attic up around the chimney. So I talk to a lot of people and say, let's take a look at your house. Let's get a side-vented water heater. Your next furnace needs to be side-vented.
then let's at least take the chimney down past the floor of the attic and let's seal it. No longer have to take care of it above the roof. If it's old and flaking, the brick has probably been damaged by condensation. The worst chimneys out there, Larry, are the ones where they put in a brand new furnace, but they still have the water heater on the chimney and they didn't line it.
Oh.
And you look in those, you look inside those chimneys that are just plain wet because they're too cold. They drop below 130 degrees or the air temperature of the exhaust gets below 130. The water condenses out. That moves through the brick and it blows out the paint and eventually damages it. So everybody's 10-year plan should include getting rid of your chimney if at all possible. There are a few steam boilers that are still a little bit of a problem with us because so many of them are chimney vented. But even there, there are some alternatives. Even if one gets rid of the old brick chimney and puts up an insulated metal B vent, it's better than having a chimney.
Yeah. I had a friend, Chuck.
Of course, if you have a fireplace, if you've got a fireplace, you've got a problem because you need a chimney.
Yeah.
So if this is coming from a fire, usually you don't have problems with the fireplace. Unless it's outside moisture, if the fireplace brick in the basement is on an outside wall, and that's usually not a big problem. Now, some of these minor masonry issues, you can call a local mason and say, is it worth having you rebuild something here? They may come over for free to take a look at it. Or call a local home inspector and say, do you know much about bricks? And many of them will charge by the hour. They're not going to inspect your whole house. But a lot of the guys are knowledgeable. In fact, I'm working on a masonry inspection thing for the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors right now to educate them further. But they can come over and take a look at it, determine the source of the moisture, see how compromised that chimney is by looking at cracks in it, shine a flashlight up to see how much heat loss there is. So a local home inspector is a generalist, but a lot of these guys have been doing it now for 25, 30 years, and they actually know quite a bit. So there are ways of getting good advice.
Well, you give lots of good advice every time you're on, John, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It was a real pleasure once again. And we'll have to talk about windows another time, I guess. For sure.
That seemed to be a very popular program, and it's complicated. I look forward to seeing you in the new year.
Yes.
And we hope that you and our listeners all have great holidays.
Thank you. Same to you, John. I appreciate your time very much. John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. It works out of Fitchburg in the Madison area. And it's always great to have him on. He'll be back in a couple of months, and we'll do it again. Next year, 2022, he'll be back. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the benefits of green spaces. Research shows that parks and tree-lined streets have a positive impact on human health and our economy. That's tomorrow at 11 on Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.